This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
The case of Arundhati Roy and power politics. Arundhati Roy is an Indian writer and activist who challenges the idea that only experts can speak out on such urgent matters as globalization of the world economy, the privatization of Indians' power supply by U.S.-based energy companies, and the construction of monumental dams that will dislocate hundreds of thousands of people.
Roy takes us to the front lines of this struggle against the Narmada Valley dams in India, a struggle for social justice and a humane democratic future, and talks about the efforts of India's courts to imprison her for speaking out on this issue.
And now we're going to hear Arundhati Roy.
I've been sitting inside for the last hour and listening to the hum growing and saying, do they think it's Jaws 3 or Arnold Schwarzenegger's new film? I just want to say a few things. One is that I know it's maybe it's not the right thing to say, but still, you know, this isn't a milestone in cinema or anything that you're going to see just now. What happened was that, as some of you might know, I was being tried as a criminal by the Indian Supreme Court for a period of a year, and sometime early this year it became obvious to me that I was going to be convicted. And at the time I wasn't sure for how long. So I finally gave in to the BBC's incessant demands on me to make a film. You know, they wanted me to make a film with them. And I just panicked, you know, just before the final sentence, because in case I went to jail, I wanted my point of view outside in the world. So this film is really, it's not really a documentary film so much as a sort of long conversation that's intercut with footage that has been shot by documentary filmmaker friends of mine who've been filming in the Narmada Valley for very many years. The second thing I want to say to you is that very often, especially outside India, people sort of assume that I somehow lead this resistance movement in the valley. I don't lead it any more than I lead the Zapatistas. I'm a writer, and I write about it, and I support it and admire it. And yet, I must tell you that this movement has existed since 1985, and the people who are involved in it are among the most wonderful people that I know. And what I do is, and I don't have a party line, not even with the NBA, which is in India. The NBA has nothing to do with basketball. It's the Narmada Bachao Andolan, which means the struggle to save the Narmada River. And I just wanted to clarify that. And the third thing I wanted to tell you was that this film, you know, it's not about, it's me talking, but it's not about me. It's about a very, very serious issue in India which has not been resolved. And I don't know whether my trial or my going to prison has helped or harmed this issue, because it's about a law in India which we have called contempt of court. And basically what is happening in India now is that as the, you know, the politicians and the government become more and more corrupt, the court is taking a lot of responsibility on itself and it's expanding its powers. And the elite and middle class are very happy about this. But what it does is it takes decisions on very, very serious issues, some good decisions and some bad ones. But the Contempt of Court Act prevents discussion, criticism, analysis of this role the court has taken upon itself. You're allowed to criticize a judgment, but you're not allowed to say put a series of judgments together and look at the politics that's emerging from what is now the most powerful institution in India. And also what the Contempt of Court Act does is that even if you have evidence, say, that a judge is corrupt, supposing you have photographic evidence or video evidence or documentary evidence, you can't even talk about it because you go to jail. You cannot even put it forward because that's contempt of court. So this is the issue that we're up against. It's a very, very serious issue. I'm going to just read out a couple of extracts from the affidavit that I wrote, which is what landed me eventually in prison. I won't explain it fully because it's explained in the film, but this is an affidavit in reply to a sort of false charge that was filed against me by some lawyers, and then the Supreme Court summoned me and I filed an affidavit in reply. And one of the things that annoyed them was that I didn't have a lawyer. I said I'll write my own affidavit because once again, you know, the language of the court is designed to make you not understand. So people don't understand what's going on and all these decisions are taken in this private space. And, you know, so I drafted my own affidavit in ordinary language and published it. And throughout the hearing, initially they would only refer to me as that woman, so I started calling myself the hooker that won the booker. But but later on, as the time came to sentence me, they would say, but the respondent is not behaving like a reasonable man. This was a big problem. So anyway, this is just sections of my affidavit, just so that, you know, you get the context of the film. It was about my having been present at a demonstration organized by the NBA outside the gates of the Supreme Court. I would like to clarify that I have never ever, either in my writing or in any public forum, cast aspersions on the character or integrity of the judges. I believe that the reflexive instinct of the powerful to protect the powerful is sufficient explanation for the kind of iniquitous judgment in the case, as in the case of the Sardar Sarovar project. The Sardar Sarovar is the dam. I went to the demonstration because I have been deeply distressed and angered by the Supreme Court's majority and therefore operative verdict on the Sardar Sarovar project. The verdict allowed the project to proceed even though the court was well aware that the Narmada Water Disputes Tribunal had been consistently violated for 13 years, that not a single village had been resettled according to the directives of the tribunal, and that the Madhya Pradesh government, which is responsible for 80% of the 400,000 ousties, had given a written affidavit in court stating that it has no land to resettle them. In effect, the Supreme Court ordered the violation of the fundamental rights to life and livelihood of hundreds of thousands of Indian citizens, most of them Dalit, which is untouchables, and Adivasi, indigenous people. As a consequence of the Supreme Court judgment, it is these unfortunate citizens who stand to lose their homes, their livelihoods, their gods, and their histories. When they came calling on the Supreme Court on the morning of December 13, 2000, they were asking the court to restore their dignity. To accuse them of lowering the dignity of the court, this contempt of court thing is the dignity of the court, lowering its dignity, to accuse them of lowering the dignity of the court suggests that the dignity of the court and the dignity of Indian citizens are incompatible, oppositional, adversarial things, that the dignity of one can only exist at the cost of the other. If this is so, it is a sad and shameful proposition. As a writer, I wish to state as emphatically, as I can, that if the court uses the contempt of court law and allows citizens to abuse its process to intimidate and harass, it will have the chilling effect of interfering with the writer's imagination and the creative act itself. This fear of harassment will create a situation in which, even before a writer puts pen to paper, she will have to anticipate what the court might think of her work. It will induce a sort of enforced, fearful self-censorship. It would be bad for law, worse for literature, and sad for the world of art and beauty. I have written and published several essays and articles on the Narmada issue and the Supreme Court judgment. None of them was intended to show contempt to the court. However, I have every right to disagree with the court's views on the subject and to express my disagreement in any publication or forum that I choose to. Regardless of everything the operative Supreme Court judgment on the Sardar Sarovar says, I continue to be opposed to big dams. I continue to believe that they are economically unviable, ecologically destructive, and deeply undemocratic. I continue to believe that the judgment disregarded the evidence placed before the court. I continue to write what I believe. Not to do so would undermine the dignity of writers, their art, their very purpose. I need hardly add that I also believe that those who hold the opposite point of view to mine, those who wish to disagree with my views, criticize them, or denounce them, have the same rights to free speech and expression as I do. In recent months, this court has issued judgments on several major public issues. For instance, the closure of polluting industries in Delhi, the conversion of public transport buses from diesel to compressed natural gas, and the judgment permitting the construction of the Sardar Sarovar Dam to proceed. All of these have had far-reaching and often unanticipated impacts. They have materially affected, for better or for worse, the lives and livelihoods of millions of Indian citizens. Whatever the justice or injustice of these judgments, whatever their final legal points, for the court to become intolerant of criticism or expressions of dissent would mark the beginning of the end of democracy. An activist judiciary that intervenes in public matters to provide a corrective to a corrupt, dysfunctional executive surely has to be more, not less, accountable. To a society that is already convulsed by political bankruptcy, economic distress, and religious and cultural intolerance, any form of judicial intolerance will come as a crippling blow. If the judiciary removes itself from public scrutiny and accountability and severs its link with the society that it was set up to serve in the first place, it will mean that yet another pillar of Indian democracy will crumble. A judicial dictatorship is as fearsome a prospect as a military dictatorship or any other form of totalitarian rule. In conclusion, I wish to affirm that as a writer, I have the right to state my opinions and beliefs. As a free citizen of India, I have the right to be part of any peaceful protest, demonstration, or march. I have the right to criticize any judgment of any court that I believe to be unjust. I have the right to make common cause with those I agree with. I hope that each time I exercise these rights, I will not be dragged to court on false charges and forced to explain my actions. So that's just the context of this documentary.
I stood on a hill and laughed out loud. I had crossed the Narmada by boat and climbed the headland on the opposite bank from where I could see, ranged across the crowns of low bald hills, the Adivasi hamlets of Sikka, Surung, Nimgaon and Domkheri. I could see their airy fragile homes. I could see their fields and the forests behind them. I knew I was looking at a civilization older than Hinduism. completed, sanctioned by the highest court in the land, to be drowned this monsoon when the waters of the Sardar Sarovar Reservoir will rise to submerge it. Why did I laugh? Because I suddenly remembered the tender concern with which the Supreme Court judges in Delhi, before vacating the legal stay on further construction of the Sardar Sarovar Dam, had inquired whether Adivasi children in the resettlement colonies would have children's parks to play in. I looked up at the endless sky and down at the river rushing past, and for a brief, brief moment, the absurdity of it all reversed my rage, and I laughed. I meant no disrespect. The charge against me is criminal contempt of court. I've been accused of lowering the dignity of the Supreme Court, of scandalizing it and lowering its authority, and that's a criminal offense. And the hearings are over, so I've been asked to appear personally before the 6th of March to await the judgment. I could be sent to prison for 6 months or for 2 months or for 1 day or until the rising of the court, or I could be humiliated and let off.
It's about 3.5 out of 10.
That bad?
But no, no, that's good.
Oh, I see.
My marks are generally good.
Okay.
Anyway, jokes aside, it looks like bad.
Looks like curtain.
My run-in with the Supreme Court began some years ago when I began to write about the big dams in the Narmada Valley and the extraordinary resistance movement that has grown along its banks. I owe rivers a debt of gratitude for all kinds of understanding. I grew up in Imanam on the banks of the Meenachal. I always think that as a very young child, those hours that I spent catching fish were the hours that made me the writer that I am. The hours of silence, the hours of contemplating and trying to insinuate yourself into the head of an unsuspecting fish. It was easier for me to understand the Narmada Valley and the problems there because I think I understand the river not as an environmentalist or as an ecologist, but just because a river was my friend when I was little, and the loss of a river is a terrible, aching thing. To write about the Narmada, I really felt that what was missing in this fight was the story, the whole story, all the connections. And I really wanted to tell the story in all its detail, but accessible to an ordinary reader. Because I really believe that the story of the Narmada Valley is the story of modern India. Not just of modern India, but it is a story of what is happening in the world today. Who counts, who doesn't, what matters, what doesn't, what counts as a cost, what doesn't, what counts as collateral damage, what doesn't. It's really a question of how power
shines the light, and what it chooses to illuminate and what it chooses to leave in the darkness. I see my job as being to increase the area which is lit as much as I can, to say, look, this is not the only thing that's going on. Just because it's dark there and they're not shining a light there, that doesn't mean nothing is happening there. But if I was going to write about it, I knew that instinct wasn't enough. I knew that I would have to argue with the world about it. I needed to know the algebra. I needed to know exactly what the mathematics were. It wasn't the arithmetic that I discovered that shocked me as much as the arithmetic that I didn't discover. It wasn't what the facts that exist that shocked me as much as the facts officially that didn't exist. I asked a couple of very vulgar questions. How many big dams are there in India? That there was a figure for. 3,600. How many people have been displaced by these big dams? There was no official figure. That chilled me. If you consider that Adivasis account for only 8% and Dalits another 15% of India's population, it opens an other dimension to the story. This is the algebra of infinite justice. The ethnic otherness of their victims take some pressure off the nation builders. It's like having an expense account. Someone else pays the bills. People from another country, another world. India's poorest people are subsidizing the lifestyles of her richest. Did I hear someone say something about the world's biggest democracy? The paperback of The God of Small Things had just come out, and that's when the nuclear tests happened.
Today, at 15:45 hours, India conducted 3 underground nuclear tests in the Pokhran Range.
I'm just talking about a civilization that produced Mahatma Gandhi. What does it mean to us to have nuclear bombs now? I suddenly realized that I have the space, I command the space in which to raise a dissenting voice. And if I don't do it, it's as political an act as doing it. I mean, to stay quiet is as political an act as speaking out. That's when I wrote The End of Imagination, my essay against the nuclear tests. You know, The God of Small Things became more and more successful, and I watched as in the city I lived in, the air became blacker, the cars became sleeker, the gates grew higher, and the poor were being stuffed like lice into the crevices. And all the time my bank account burgeoned, I began to feel as though every feeling in The God of Small Things had been traded in for a silver coin. And if I wasn't careful, I would become a little silver figurine with a cold silver heart. And around that time, when this discomfort was growing, suddenly the Supreme Court lifted a stay and allowed the Sardar Sarovar Dam to be built up by another 5 meters. I was present at a demonstration outside the gates of the Supreme Court. The people at the demonstration were basically people from the valley who had been displaced by the dam at its current height, had not been resettled, and they were there to tell the court that it was wrong. What happened after that was that a group of 5 lawyers filed a case in the Supreme Court alleging that I and Medha Patkar and Prashant Bhushan, who's the lawyer of the NDA, had tried to kill them and that we had shouted slogans against the court.
I'd never set eyes on these lawyers before. I had absolutely no idea who they were.
A friend of mine, Sanjay Kak, he's been filming in the valley for some years now, so he's filmed it all. And, of course, there are the police, the cameras, everything was there. It's all on record. So, I had tried to kill this man.
They were organizing orgy on the gate of the Supreme Court, and they were trying only to...
Orgy. What does that mean?
Orgy means violent, unrestrained agitation. She caught my beard. She hugged me.
Now it is okay.
For judges, they are pious. I like Hindu widow.
They are lords
they
of our country.
Judges should be untouched.
Supreme Court,
judges
are,
the status of judges are as pious as Hindu ladies of Hindustan. They should be untouched from public criticism and from press.
It was a ludicrous charge. It wasn't even accepted by the local police station. The court eventually dismissed those lawyers' petition, then filed yet another contempt case against me, suo moto, which means the court itself took on the case against me, for three paragraphs in my affidavit, which they said have lowered the authority of the Supreme Court. I'm just quoting from the affidavit. It indicates a disquieting inclination on the part of the court to silence criticism and muzzle dissent, to hide those who disagree with it. By entertaining a petition that even a local police station does not see fit to act upon, the Supreme Court is doing its own reputation and credibility considerable harm.
And you've been listening to Arundhati Roy, who is a writer of a new book, Power Politics, and she is the author of The God of Small Things, and I was lucky enough to catch up with her just a few days ago. She lives in Delhi, India, and she has been censored, she has been abused, and she has come back to be a champion of those who stand for free speech, for creativity, and for cultural workers with a social conscience, and has brought the prominence of the Narmada Valley dams to the world community in the effort of people to keep their land, their culture, their gods, as she says. And this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with
Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.